First, we take a look at some of the most intriguing stories in the world of science in our monthly check-in with Discover Magazine. This month, a lot has been accomplished in the field of paralysis research, but how far have we come and what does the future hold? Then, a drought in South Africa led to thousands of flamingos abandoning their nests and their eggs. We'll talk about what researchers learned when they rescued the chicks left behind. And can plants think? Some researchers have claimed that plants are conscious, to some degree, but many in the plant science world say the studies behind those claims are shaky. Anna Groves is an associate editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Anna, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with paralysis research. Now, Discover had covered research into trying to help restore movement and control over limbs control was lost because of paralysis about a decade ago. And you kind of did a check-in with that. There was a prediction that, hey, maybe by 2019, we'd really have something. Where are we?
Yeah, this was a really fun case where we found this story from just about exactly 10 years ago where somebody had said, hey, in 10 years, we're going to have this figured out. And I wouldn't say we're quite there yet. We haven't, quote unquote, cured paralysis, but we're a heck of a lot closer than we used to be. So we do have the first signs of people who were in wheelchairs, paralyzed from the waist down, who are taking physical steps.
What are the technologies that researchers are using to try to do this?
Well, the latest technology uses something called epidural stimulation, which epidural, you might recognize that word from like giving birth epidural, that's related to the spine. So epidural stimulation is just where researchers will give these paralysis patients a little electrical shock right on their spine, right where their injury is. And this shock actually, it doesn't give your legs any information, but it gives the existing nerves just enough of, I don't want to say energy, but like the shock sort of mimics what the nerves naturally would do, and it gives it enough of that boost that it allows your brain to reconnect to the legs. So these people who were once paralyzed are being able to actually move their own legs.
So this is not quite in public commercial use yet, it sounds like. So maybe another decade and we'll see if we could predict 10 years in the future, we might see this being used by more people?
Well, we sure hope so. There are some hurdles still to get over. Hurdles, that was bad. But a lot of these people, they're taking steps. They have to still be assisted, though. So you might see them walking with a walker. Certainly, that's still much better than being in a wheelchair. The other promising thing they've already found is this epidural stimulation can restore some bladder and bowel function and sexual function, just like all sorts of things that come with being paralyzed. So in 10 more years, the hope is that people will be able to walk more freely. They won't have to have such this like clunky assisted gait. Maybe people could walk as if they had never been injured in the first place.
Talking to Anna Groves from Discover Magazine, looking at some stories from the world of science. I want to move on to one you wrote about, Anna. Flamingos, a flamingo rescue effort, this one in Africa. Tell us this story.
Yes, this was an incredible story. So earlier this year, there was a drought at a breeding site where the lesser flamingos breed in South Africa. So first of all, lesser flamingos are colonial breeders, which means they gather by the thousands to make their nests and lay their eggs and hatch their eggs and all that. But one of their big breeding sites faced a drought, and it was right at the worst possible time. So they had made their nests, they had laid their eggs, and then right when the eggs were all about to hatch, maybe a few of them had started to hatch, this drought came, and so the parent flamingos couldn't get enough food to eat. So they were forced to leave their nests so that they wouldn't die, but that left all of these abandoned eggs and chicks. And luckily, this breeding site was close enough to a town, the town of Kimberley, South Africa, that like bird watchers and wildlife officials noticed that this happened, and they actually teamed up and rescued these chicks.
And these lesser flamingos, it's kind of a weird situation. There's lots of them, but they're on the verge of being threatened because they rely, it sounds like, on a fairly limited type of environment, a habitat that is at risk.
Right. So normally when you think of animals that are at risk of extinction, you think of animals that there's like only a few of left in the wild. And there's millions of these lesser flamingos, but because they only have 6 breeding sites left in the whole world, if they lose those breeding sites, that will just be the end of them. It doesn't matter how many there are left.
And finally, as part of this effort, it sounds like scientists learned a lot about the lesser flamingos, because in the wild, these guys are pretty hard to study.
Yeah. So there's a lot that's not known about these flamingos, like even simple things like, do they return to the same place where they were born to breed, or will they go to a new breeding site when they're adults? And so this rescue is actually going to open up a lot of research opportunities, because they were able to tag the birds. So they gave all the birds they rescued a little yellow anklet, so that from now on, any birders and researchers who see them in the wild will know which ones were born at this site. And they also put like satellite tracking backpacks on 20 of them. And this is just going to reveal like unprecedented information, because they just haven't been able to track these birds before, because they live in such remote places except for this one breeding site.
And finally, in our last couple of minutes, Anna, the question of plant consciousness. There's been some headline-grabbing research over the years that say, hey, plants have things that are similar to neurons and can react, you know, as though they have consciousness. There's pushback on that, though, from a lot of people in the botany world. What is the debate?
Yeah, so this debate has been going on for a number of years, and I think finally a group of researchers in the plant sciences were finally like, come on, stop it. Plants aren't sentient. And so this was how I found out about it, was this particular group published a paper in a scientific journal that just broke down some of these studies and the evidence that people had provided trying to say that plants are sentient, and said, actually, no, here's where we think you're wrong.
And there were studies that got a lot of attention that said, okay, plants can kind of learn that being dropped isn't so bad, or that which way to turn toward light even when it's dark outside. The trick was, it sounds like, other scientists weren't able to replicate those initial studies.
Yeah, yeah. So there's been a lot of arguments. Well, I'll take one at a time. So there's the plant dropping experiment, where some researchers claimed that if you drop a plant enough times for a particular plant that actually closes up its leaves in response to a disturbance, so you can actually see it responding to being dropped, if you drop it enough times, it learns, quote-unquote, that being dropped isn't a threat, and so it stops closing up its leaves. But then if you shake it really hard, it still closes up its leaves. That means it's learned that being dropped isn't so bad, and being shaken is. But of course, other researchers say being shaken isn't the same as being dropped. The plant is just fatigued, all of these arguments. Then in a separate study where they were looking at how plants grow towards light, I'm trying to think of the short version of this story.
Well, that's okay. I think we'll have to leave it there. But the gist is the state of the science, it sounds like, is probably plants don't think in the way we think about thinking.
There's not convincing evidence of that, no.
All right, we'll leave it there. Anna, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Anna Groves, assistant editor at Discover Magazine, based in Waukesha. She joined us today to talk about some of the latest news from the world of science. In that flamingo story, there's some great pictures of the lesser flamingos. They don't look lesser to me. Have a look. I'm holding it up to the microphone right now. They get pink, apparently, from eating what we call blue-green algae, cyanobacteria. We don't like it in our lakes here. The lesser flamingos seem to love it. It's what turns them pink.